At halftime, the score was tied. As Harvard's marching band took the field, Blackwell's group jumped up in unison and adjourned to the concession area. Dean Simmons stepped over into our row and tagged after them, not bothering to suggest I come along. Which was good, because I had no intention of going through all that all over again. Audrey broke out our thermos of hot chocolate while I hunted down two hot dogs from a roving vendor. When I returned, she handed me a steaming cup. I handed her a hot dog. She took a small bite and placed it on her lap so she could continue cradling her cup with her bare hands. She was breathing in the steam, not letting any of its heat go to waste. It was making her nose look like Rudolph's, and it sounded like she had the sniffles. I was hungry and consumed my hot dog in three bites, washing it down with scalding hot chocolate. She magnanimously let me have her hot dog, claiming her only interest was the hot chocolate. She did keep some of the bun, however, to nibble on later. When Harvard's marching band completed its precision performance, Columbia's highly non-precision, ragtag band of misfit musicians took the field with their zany instruments, kazoos, washboards, and plastic toy saxophones, to perform their usual spoof on marching bands. Their antics, some gross, got Audrey laughing so hard she sucked down a piece of the hot dog bun, which provoked a 3-minute coughing attack that drew concern from people around us. By hand signal, she was able to convey that she was all right, and gradually she recovered. Before the second half began, I noticed Magnolia and Cross milling around down near the players' bench, looking up at me menacingly and reconfirming our appointment for after the game. Audrey noticed it too, and in a croaky, still recovering voice, said to me, "Parker, they're serious. What are you going to do?" Feeling the dean's eyes on my back, I indicated that we should pay attention to the game. We did. After a while, I nudged her and said, "Lean closer." I whispered into her ear, "Feareth not. I have a fiendishly clever plan that I thought up while getting our hot dogs." She said, "You mean sneak out before the game's over? We can't. They'll see us." I said, "No, that won't work. But I figured out a way we can delay their departure while we use the time to make our getaway." She said, "How?" I said, "Here is my ingenious plan, but I need you to help me carry it out." She said, "Sure. What do I do?" I said, "I need you to deliver a message behind enemy lines." I removed a folded piece of paper from my pocket. "I want you to hand deliver this." She said, "What is it?" "It's a handwritten message from the dean behind us, telling them to wait and see him after the game." She said, "Did he write it?" "Yes." "How did you get him to write it?" "I didn't have to. He already had." I nudged her to lean in closer and then spoke directly into her ear. "When I was given the tickets to this game, I also received a note from the dean that read, 'Mr. Robinson, do not fail to show up. See me after the game, Dean Simmons.' I found the note in the pocket of my pea coat while I was searching for hot dog money." She said, "So what did you do?" "I just tore off the salutation part. Now it says, 'Do not fail to show up. See me after the game, Dean Simmons.'" She nodded her understanding. "What I want you to do is deliver this note to them just before the end of the game. Say it's from the man who is sitting behind us. That should hold them long enough for us to get away." The tie was broken on the opening drive of the second half. From then on, the lead changed hands 3 times. Finally, with 45 seconds left and the home crowd preparing themselves for another disappointing loss, the outcome was decided on a 75-yard run-back interception, snatching improbable victory from the bewildered jaws of defeat. The miracle assured, the crowd went wild. I gave Audrey the go-ahead. She flew down the steps and delivered the note, and then quickly returned, unscathed. The game over, we made our way promptly down the stands, our ploy apparently succeeding. Magnolia and Cross were hanging back, chafing at watching us go, but dutifully waiting as per ordered. Gleefully, we made our way out. I was already congratulating myself on my ingenuity and thinking that if I ever told this story to anyone, the most amazing thing about it was going to be my happening upon the dean's note in my pocket and the clever use I was able to put it to. However, that didn't turn out to be the most amazing thing at all, not by a long shot. The real capper came with what happened next. And even had I had a whole week to think up a preferred outcome, and then had had a genie in a bottle to grant me that wish, I couldn't have dreamed up a better result.